Another late night edition of the Lauren and Fitz podcast.
Late night, we're recording this. It's almost 11 o'clock, which when you get as old as us, it's pretty late.
Yeah, when it's this late at night for Lauren and I, two things are happening. One, you're just getting off of the night shift at work, or two, you're a little buzzed, and I think, you know what, we fall into both of those categories this
tonight,
evening.
Tonight, you are off the night shift, I'm a little buzzed, because I went to a late dinner, and then Fritz called me and said, hey, podcast, and I was like, oh, snap, I'm buzzed, I will race home, or Rachel will race home, I did not drive, Rachel drove.
That's right, we do not advocate drunk driving on the Lauren and Fritz podcast.
We do not condone that behavior, and we will do this podcast just a little bit buzzed, so I'm ready to roll.
I must say that out of the two things that can happen while you're up this late, one of them really sucks, and the other one is really cool. And I got the one that really sucks.
It's kind of bitter. Like, Lauren, I'm home from work. Cool. I've been drinking since 6. So.
All right. So, anyways, right. We got a couple of big movies. That we both saw. How about that?
We both saw a movie, so we don't have to describe it to the other one. All right, well, we'll start with the older of the two, The Social Network, the Facebook movie.
Yeah, we are really behind the time. Everyone was talking about this weeks ago. It seemed to really die down since the second movie, which we'll get to in a little bit, Jackass, came out, though. But, yeah, what a movie, The Social Network, man.
I thought it was great. David Fincher is back.
You know what I couldn't believe was both Amber and I, after watching the movie, it just really made us, like, energized. It really made us push ourselves for some reason. Like, we got out of that movie theater, and Amber and I are like, you know what? Let's do this. Let's get off our ass, and let's do something. Just after watching a whole movie of a guy who's younger than you are trying to, you know what I mean, blowing $1 billion, and you're just like, wow, man, my life is pathetic, man.
Well, the funny thing for me was, the movie starts at the same time period as my senior year of college. And I'm thinking, like, okay, when this is happening, what was I doing? And it wasn't nearly as impressive as what he was doing, let me tell you.
I mean, but the movie, it was just such a well-done movie. And it was... It's hard to explain just because it's really well paced. You're really interested in the whole story because, let's face it, everyone's on Facebook. So it was just so interesting. But then the characters the whole time, you're sitting there and you're teetering the whole time you're watching the movie, and you're just trying to decide, okay, is this guy an asshole or is he cool? I can't decide. And
I definitely think he was an asshole. I mean, just about everybody in the movie is an asshole in some capacity. It's just a level of how far is this person willing to go. And also, it's interesting to say, I almost feel, this is an interesting thing I find with David Fincher movies, because I felt it was an interesting analog to Fight Club, in that I felt that Fight Club, as a movie, is at war with itself as far as where it stands in Tyler Durden. I feel that the script was saying Tyler Durden is a bad guy. Tyler Durden is a guy who's just created this cult of mindless idiots who are wanting to destroy things without any thoughts to the repercussions. But the movie that you see when you see Fight Club, clearly David Fincher thinks Tyler Durden's a really cool guy.
Yeah.
So the same thing is going on with The Social Network. I believe that David Fincher thinks that Mark Zuckerberg is an asshole and is not a good person. But the script seems to bend over backwards in its final moments to say, Mark Zuckerberg is a little misunderstood. What with the stealing of the ideas and the not being nice to people in general and having no social graces and all that.
Yeah, I really thought the Harvard guy, I don't really think that he stole the idea from the Harvard guys whatsoever.
It's one of those things though, where they kind of lay it out where basically people gave him the seeds and he made them great. It's one of those things, though, it really comes down to the one line in the film, which is, if you were the people who invented Facebook, you would have invented Facebook. And that is pretty much exactly right. And also, when people get all caught up in this, I feel like people forget that a lot of great American ingenuity, not to say that Facebook is a piece of great American ingenuity, really all it is a time waster, but whatever, is that, so many things are stolen. Thomas Edison stole so much shit. Oh my gosh, look it up. It's true. So, if anything, he was just following in the great American tradition of stealing stuff and making it your own and then banking that shit because, whoa, youngest billionaire ever.
That's what an invention is. It's your own invention. Like, yeah. But it was just so, like, it was the only criticism I think I had of the movie is I felt it kind of ended a bit abruptly. But I'm a sucker for any movie that tells you what happened to the people at the end of the movie in the text. I don't know why I love that so much, but if the movie has that, like, the perfect case in point is The Sandlot. You know, anything that says, like, what they did after the movie ended, I don't know why I love that. Just the sense of conclusion, I guess, that you get from that. It makes me feel all warm and fuzzy inside. But I did feel it kind of ended abruptly, but I think that was just because it was a really good movie.
Yeah, I think that's sort of where it goes. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, I would have to say, though, this is one of the most accurate depictions of how the internet actually works and how people talk and use the internet. Because there's so many movies you watch where people are on computers or talking about the internet in any way, and it's really fakey and wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see this because it looked like shit, but I'm the new Wall Street sequel.
Which everyone, I heard good things about that.
I heard it was awful.
Hmm.
I read somebody said that it's, if you see it and you're in your 20s, you will laugh your way right out of the theater because it is so bad. But because there's a scene where...
Let's face it, Shia LaBeouf is not putting out quality work lately.
I haven't heard he's the really bad part. I heard it's a lot of other things. But the
I'm not saying it's Shia LaBeouf's fault. I'm just saying Transformers 2, anyone?
Oh, Transformers 2 is a bad movie. I can't argue with that one. No, in the movie, his girlfriend, who is Gordon Gekko's daughter, it runs a blog, and she has to apparently shut it down for a week for a redesign. And anybody who knows anything about the internet knows that you don't shut down your blog for a week to do redesigns.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that's done somewhere else in the use of servers. I'm sure my friend Tor could go in and tell us all about it, but we would be bored, and we don't want to be bored. So basically, it's bullshit. Also, she prints out her blogs and spell checks them. No one does that.
The internet is made for bad grammar.
Oh, it's, yeah, exactly. And also, no one prints out their blogs. No one. Have you ever typed anything up on the internet and then said, I'm going to print this out?
No.
No. No one. No one.
No, in fact, most of the stuff I type on the internet, I pray to God, is never printed out.
There you go. Exactly. So The Social Network, as far as representing how the internet works and how people use the internet, I thought was fairly accurate. Plus, I mean, at one point, the guy's on LiveJournal in 2003, and that is true to fucking life.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
When he was on LiveJournal posting that stuff, when he first breaks up with her in the beginning, I was like, oh, my God, I remember LiveJournal. Holy shit, man. I remember when that was the Twitter.
That was the thing.
That was the Twitter.
That was the Twitter of 2003, 2004. Mm-hmm. I still have a LiveJournal. I never deactivated it, and it's still obviously people are still using LiveJournal because it hasn't gone under. Mm-hmm. Another blog site, this Vox blog I started in 2007, died.
Huh.
I mean, I didn't even think that happened with the internet. I thought it just stayed there forever, but apparently they're done. But LiveJournal, it still exists, so go LiveJournal on that one.
Well, interesting thing, though, about, because after I got home, did a little bit of research, I thought it was interesting the stuff that they didn't put in the movie in question, The Social Network, there we go, was the fact that Mark Zuckerberg had a girlfriend the whole entire time.
Yeah, that I actually saw an interview with him where he said that he did have a girlfriend the entire time, and that's pretty much public knowledge, common knowledge. It's the same girlfriend he has now, actually.
Yeah.
And that he said, I mean, keep in mind, it's this guy talking about a movie that kind of slams him pretty hard, but he said that the thing with the girlfriend that dumps him, forcing him, is that he says Hollywood can't really comprehend the idea of a person building something for the sake of building something.
Yeah, that's what I thought, was because if he would have had a girl, because the whole movie, it made you feel like he was doing this to spite his ex-girlfriend or do something because of his ex-girlfriend. I mean, there's numerous scenes, but the fact of the matter, like, that was completely inaccurate, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Yeah, well, also, I would say as a narrative construct, someone just making something for the hell of it without any sort of arc to it, just, hey, I made this, that's all there is to it, isn't very interesting. I would say that the movie is interesting for the fact that, you know, having this opening scene with the girlfriend who dumps him and then him basically arcing through it. I mean, if you think about it, it's in perfect... You see that character, or at least see that character referenced at three moments in the movie. The very beginning, the absolute middle, and the very end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just a perfect arc there. I would, you know, I still say, even though it is fake, I mean, it's still entertaining as hell. And David, like, I want to say, David Fincher is back. Forget about Benjamin Button. Put it out of your mind. David Fincher back. Now, he is now currently filming The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, which, I don't know, I'm not really that hyped for it. I'm not really that excited for that. But at this moment, David Fincher back. There we go.
Yeah, it's really hard to make it sound entertaining. Just because it wasn't a very exciting movie, but it's just damn good watching, man. I haven't heard anyone slam The Social Network, and I don't think
also,
you can.
Also, Justin Timberlake, man. He's on his way to an EGOT, believe it.
Yeah, I mean, that was a really good performance. So, what can you say? It was just an all-around good movie. It just wasn't...
I think people are saying Oscar talk, believe it or not, and I hope so.
Hmm.
Do it. Let's do it. Let's make it happen.
Are they talking Eisenberg's going to get the Oscar for this one?
I haven't heard anything about him, per se. I've heard a lot of talk about Andrew Garfield. I've heard a lot of talk about... who's that guy? Justin Timberlake. Yeah. I heard a lot of talk about him.
Hmm.
So...
I mean, just to drop it out there, you know, my wife knows Jesse Eisenberg, so, you know,
I'm rooting for my boy. If he gets an Oscar, she should totally go to his house and get a picture taken. I'm saying. So, now, speaking of Oscars, we, of course, have to segue into the brand new Jackass 3D.
Knoxville for president. There we go.
All right, now, what did you think of this movie? Because I have to say it, I was disappointed.
Really? Because I heard a lot of people going into it, because I ended up seeing it not opening day, the second day that it was out. So I ended up hearing a lot of feedback, and a lot of friends were telling me, you know, all this and that about it. And the simple fact of the matter is the movie has no plot. It's not really a movie. It's just a collection of bullshit. And that's all it is.
My disappointment stems from the fact that Jackass number 2 is amazing. Jackass number 2 is incredible. It's just, that is the ultimate in Jackass everything. They blow that shit out of the water. And Jackass 3D, they seem to have spent their entire budget on 3D cameras and high def cameras and the stunts.
And let's not forget the slow motion cameras.
And the slow motion.
Can we think of the baseball scene real quick here?
Right.
Because that was money well spent, my friend. That was.
I feel like all of these stunts and sketches were low tech and not really. I mean, a lot of them were sequels to old sketches. I wasn't really seeing a lot of. I mean, this is going to sound dumb, thought and ingenuity, but you know, the second movie was all about blowing my mind, scene after scene after scene. I left Jackass number 2 literally crying with laughter. I left Jackass 3D, laughed a couple times, felt like I was going to throw up a couple times. That was my range.
I was laughing my ass off. I absolutely loved the movie. I thought it was... I'm really excited for 3.5, which is going to be coming out in January. I thought it was Jackass true to form. I wouldn't say it was better than the original Jackass or Jackass 2. But it was just, it was more Jackass, and it was
I mean, I was still
hilarious.
I didn't hate it, but I don't know. Also, it was really heavy on the poop and the pee, and I don't know. I felt like they had hit a wall, and they were like, well, we have to do stuff with poop now, because we haven't really done anything with poop too far. And so the scene with the train diorama and then the guy essentially, ejectile poops into the air took me completely by surprise, I'm not going to lie, but
yeah.
It was still just super sick. And then with Steve-O in the porta-potty being flung into the air, being covered in poop, that bit, basically, that was it, and then they just stretched that for 5 minutes.
Because it was great.
I don't know, it was gross, but I don't know, I didn't think anything could touch most of the bits they did in Jackass number 2. I mean, for one thing, you couldn't top the paper cuts from Jackass number two, just off the top of my head. Yeah. And also the bit when they make Bam cry in Jackass 3D is nothing compared to when they make him cry in Jackass number two.
Yeah.
Jackass number two is just, also the finale of Jackass 3D felt very bargain basement in comparison to the finale of Jackass number two, in which they're all in old age makeup getting blown in half by awesome special effects.
Yeah, I will say that the ending scene was, you know, it seemed like on paper it was going to be a lot funnier than it actually was in the movie. But I wouldn't say that it's better, but I was definitely not disappointed just because it was.
I don't know. I mean, it was still entertaining. I mean, if you like Jackass, I'd definitely say definitely see it. But I don't feel it had as many showstopper, oh my god, moments that the other movies have. Also, I feel that they were retreading themselves with skits of lesser. I would say like the Rocky bits were honestly not that impressive in the grand scheme of Jackassness.
I don't see. It seemed to me that I think the reason why I loved it so much was because you've seen these guys for so long, and which, by the way, this is another little piece which I had no idea that it was out there. Somehow it flew under my radar, but the whole Steve-O in you know, the intervention with Steve-O, the MTV piece that they put together on him. Did you see that at all?
I read about it. I don't think I actually saw it.
Oh, yeah. You can watch it on YouTube. It's like a 5-part thing. And it was an hour-long thing they put on MTV. And it was all about, because basically Steve-O was obsessed with filming himself. So they had all this footage of like Steve-O in his personal life, like just fucking on drugs, just like watching him die, essentially. Like he was just killing himself. Like the most depressing thing. And the whole thing was about how the Jackass guys sat down and, you know, took him to, you know, basically had an intervention with him. And, you know, you're watching Steve-O talk about this and everything like that. And it was just this, you know, you've been watching Jackass for so long. I remember watching it in the first place. I remember before that, I remember going to my friend's house because he got a bootlegged CKY video that he recorded from his, you know, copied that. So it seems to me like I've been watching Bam Margera and Johnny Knoxville, and it's been going on for years now, and they're in their 30s, and when you're watching this, like, bits like the Rocky bit, it's like watching your own friends, you know, like, I know this is sad and pathetic, you know what I mean, like, I feel like I know these people, but, I mean, it seemed like it was all inside practical joke type stuff that, you know, you're in on.
Well, Rachel asked me, like, what the appeal was, and I said there is a sense of camaraderie, and you've been hanging out with these guys as it were 10 years, and it's fun to see them again doing this. I don't know. Jackass number two, I loved. I thought it was so great. I rewatched it recently. It was on TV. And still, killed me. I was keeled over. And this movie just didn't, I just didn't think, I'd say the one sketch that really threw me and just pushed me to the limit was the, when they used the Lamborghini to pull that guy's tooth out.
Oh, yeah, that was
pretty great. I thought that was pretty good. But there were so many bits that, I mean, the beehive.
The beehive thing was kind of stupid.
Beehive tether ball. All I could think about was the great beehive bit they did with the limousine and the barbarians in Jackass number two. Well, once again, brilliant. All I can say is Jackass 3D, it's all right, but Jackass number two is still the king.
Yeah, I would totally agree with you that it's not better than their previous outings, but just because how many stupid things can you do? I mean, yeah, they got run over by the bulls again, and
well, yeah, the
that
bulls
scene with the ram was actually pretty funny.
The ram stuff was not bad. I enjoyed that stuff. I didn't think the ape in the hotel room bit worked.
Yeah, that fell flat on its face, quite honestly.
I really couldn't believe that the parent that felt, I would say, as close to staged as they've done in a while. I really couldn't believe that the parents really, especially considering, I mean, I guess you could argue, oh, they thought that they put an ape in their room because they put alligators in their houses, but I really found that hard to believe.
Especially yeah, it fell down real fast.
It didn't really work. And it went on for a while. I mean, if the dad hadn't totally had to shit in the middle of it, it might have been completely a waste of time.
Well, you know what? I watched a lot of stuff, too, before it came out because MTV was played all this behind-the-scenes stuff on it. And one thing I didn't know is the Danger Aaron guy, the Aaron McGeehee or whatever he is.
Yeah.
All the guys in Jackass literally hate him. Like, they are annoyed to death with this guy. They do not like him one bit. And so when you watch the movie, I just was watching it and just laughing my ass off as they just did these fucking horrible things to him. You know what I mean?
They genuinely don't
like the guy. They're really annoyed by him.
Wow, jeez. I would have to say that the other thing that bugged me was, like, the bits with the camera next to Bam's penis when he was urinating on people. That felt like a weaker version of when they would go around with the clippers and trim a bit off the top of everybody's head.
Yeah, but I mean, he was pissing on him, for Christ's sake.
It's fucking hilarious. I don't know. That's kind of like the peeing on somebody thing. I feel like that's an easy fix. Like, they just change their shirt and it's all done. You know what I mean?
What about when he ran up that ramp and had the dirt hill when the midget guy was dressed as a leprechaun and he just totally just nailed
that
the joke.
That was pretty good. Like I said, I didn't hate the movie. I mean, the whole time I was thinking, man, Jackass number 2 had me in stitches, had me dying on the ground. This movie, intermittently, it was hit and miss.
Well, something to watch, though, is that Steve-O documentary was really, really good.
Absolutely.
So, very interesting. So, I mean, Jackass 3D, it's a must-see. I mean, I understand why critics would bash it and things like that, but it's more Jackass. Like, it's just really good. It's really good to see just more Jackass, that's all.
I think this is kind of it, though, and those end credits seem to indicate this is pretty much the last
hurrah. Yeah, they filmed it up for 2 movies. That's why there's the 3.5 coming. Same thing as they did with the other one with the 2.5. So the other it's going to be straight to DVD, not out to theaters and shit like that. But yeah, I mean, that's another thing too, is it's the end, at the end credits when they, and I did, is that really the Jackass guys singing on memory?
I'm sure they probably for like the soundtrack version, they're singing on the Weezer song. Yeah. Entirely possible. Okay, now this is going back because you asked me about this movie at the very tail end of the last podcast. We didn't get to talk about it.
Which Amber is making me hate Will Ferrell more and more. It's just because I'm married to a woman that hates Will Ferrell. So now Will Ferrell stuff is just, really doing it for me.
Well, either way, I saw the other guys. Rachel and I both saw it. And we actually saw like a screener copy.
Mm-hmm.
Don't ask me how I got it, but we saw a screener copy. And we really wished we had seen it in the theaters because it was motherfucking hilarious.
What made it hilarious?
Just beginning to end, completely unexpected, super funny jokes. Mark Wahlberg, hilarious. Will Ferrell, hilarious.
I have to stop. Mark Wahlberg, hilarious. That my brain cannot register that statement.
Mark Wahlberg's been funny. Have you seen The Departed? Mark Wahlberg is hilarious in The Departed. And that's intentional. He is so funny. And Mark Wahlberg's character, the whole movie, is just so mad at Will Ferrell, and it's amazing. And also, there's a great bit where he will... it turns out that he has all these talents, where he can tap dance and do all these things, and you find that he can do all of them because he learned them so he could mock someone else who does them. It's such a funny movie. I cannot tell you enough. There is a great bit early on with these two super cops played by The Rock and Samuel Jackson that has to be seen to be believed. Rachel and I watched it with our mouths agape because we couldn't believe what we were seeing. It's such a funny movie.
God, just Will Ferrell, Mark Wahlberg, The Rock, or what's his, The Rock Johnson, or whatever, Dwayne The Rock. It's just, oh, like when I'm hearing this and I'm just cringing and
it's such a funny movie.
I'm just thinking Land of the Lost and...
Well, okay, Land of the Lost, I know that one is... I mean, I like that movie.
What M. Night Shyamalan movie was Mark Wahlberg in?
Oh, The Happening?
Oh.
Hey, I'm not saying Mark Wahlberg hasn't been in bad movies. Dude, Max Payne fucking sucks, okay? Don't get me wrong. But he is so hilarious in this movie. So funny. Like, I've heard people say this is like Mark Wahlberg's best performance. I would not fight them on that. It's... Super great. There you go.
I think it came too close to Cop Out, you know what I mean? Like, it just seems like
As I understand it, because I didn't see Cop Out, because I understand Cop Out's pretty awful, but people say it's basically a funny version of Cop Out. But yeah, it's really, really funny. And I mean, it skirts that line of the absurdity that of the other movies. It's set more in the real world than any other of the Adam McKay, Will Ferrell movies are. You know, I would say...
Are they still doing Anchorman 2?
No. Anchorman 2 was shut down by the studios.
Whew, thank goodness.
For money reasons. But also, I initially was sad when I heard that because I love Anchorman and I think it's great. But then I read that they were going to do a musical. And I was like, oh, I'm so glad they shot that down.
Yeah, count me out for that.
I could take a couple, like, jokey songs in the middle of the movie, but a whole fucking movie? No way. No how. No. So that we dodged a bullet, everybody. Whenever you hear, oh, they're not making an Anchorman 2, it was going to be a musical. So you can sleep well at night. Your children are safe.
Now this has made me think of something else here to get off topic, but thinking of Anchorman, it's making me think of The Office. And this new season of The Office is just terrible.
What?
I am not liking this new season. I watched the first, like, 3 episodes, and then I can't care that it's on anymore.
Really? I have, you know, when I was talking about this with Rachel today, I feel that The Office was really, really good. Like, we're going to start from the beginning. Like, when
did
it start.
When did Dwight buy The Office? Like, I don't...
He bought it at the tail end of last season.
Did he?
Yes, he did.
I don't remember. Why did he buy the building? How did he end up... I don't even remember this.
He bought the building because... Something with the... maybe it wasn't... It was something in the trade-off with the companies... you know, when the one company bought the other company, something like that. I don't think it's really super important. It's okay. All I know is that he has it. My feeling was is that the show was admittedly taking a downturn at one point. Rachel, I think, pointed out it was the season where they were not in the office, and it seemed like the writers kept trying to find reasons to get them out of the office.
Yeah.
And those episodes were really kind of weak. But I feel
it's like jumping the shark, you know what I mean? You take them out of the diner, and then it's exactly. Over.
The show definitely picked up again with the Michael Scott Paper Company episodes.
Yeah, I kind of like that.
Those episodes were fantastic. And I feel that it, since then, I've been with it, and I feel it's been consistently really, really funny. And this season, I mean, I guess you haven't been enjoying it, but I thought this last week's episode with the musical with Ed Helms, I thought that was hilarious. I watched that episode twice because I watched it and then Rachel watched it again.
I didn't see that because I lost interest in it.
Oh, so hilarious.
See, because
they pushed the level of... Because the thing is that also I felt that at a couple points they had gotten away from the awkward comedy and weren't doing that so much anymore. And they definitely had a scene where basically someone's cell phone goes off during a play performance that really pushed it to a really great level. Of course, Rachel and I agree that still the most one of the most awkward episodes of The Office still remains the one where Michael Scott has to go back to the school that he promised he would pay all their college tuition.
Yeah.
Nothing's more awkward than that episode. That episode pushed the awkward envelope as hard as you could. I was afraid to come back from commercial watching those episodes.
Oh yeah, definitely. But so, because I think maybe the European office has really tainted it. What I really loved was it was a very down-to-earth show where it was, you know, as you and I so well pointed out, is a lot of the stuff that happened in the office was legitimate stuff that really happened in an office.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like,
and then, don't get me wrong. The office has completely run its course.
Oh, yeah.
At this point, I am just thrilled by the fact that it still maintains being funny. It's no longer a show that I can relate to in any way because it's hit all those buttons. It's hit all those, remember this when it happened to you at work. I mean, I've hit all those. Those have all been, firmly hit. Hit on all. Well, so, I mean,
like,
I'm
thinking, like, I thought it was really funny when they introduced that Dwight lived on a beet farm. You know what I mean? Like, oh God, you know, how much of a loser is this guy? He lives on a beet farm and he loves his beet farm. And then now he's covered in beets, staring at the window, trying to buy a porcelain. It just seems like they're all just playing caricatures of the most extreme parts of their personalities. And it just is so over the top that I'm just like, I'm just lost on it. I don't care about the characters anymore because the characters are all just really extreme and really predictable. You know exactly what Dwight's going to do. Dwight's going to do something that's way too serious, and Jim's constantly going to be playing a prank on him. And I'm like, really? What season are we on now? 6 seasons of that?
It's funny. I don't disagree with anything you're saying, but the show is still funny to me. So I'm still going to stick with it. Like, I haven't gotten to the point at all where I'm like, I'm not going to watch this show anymore. Yeah. It's still really funny. And this week's episode, which I haven't seen yet, but tonight's episode, Timothy Oliphant's on it. I love Timothy Oliphant. I love Justified. So I'm definitely watching that. And as Rachel said, she can take or leave The Office. And obviously, with tonight's episode, she will have to take it. So for me, I mean, I don't disagree with any of that. I mean, I still agree. I mean, of like the Thursday night shows, I mean, Community and Parks and Rec are better. You know, but, well, Parks and Rec isn't on right now, but it's, you know, they're better, but I still enjoy The Office. Also, 30 Rock is better. Although 30 Rock had a rough season last season. This season's been great. This season, 30 Rock is back.
See, I can't stand Tracy Morgan. Tracy Morgan gets under my skin.
Alec Baldwin is amazing.
Yeah. I'm just a Debbie Downer tonight. That's all I am.
Oh.
I love Jackass. I hate everything else.
Oh. Well, I wanted to talk about, I finished this book recently. It's by this online film critic. His name is Vern. His website, outlawvern.com. And he reviews movies, and he has a very esoteric way of viewing movies. And he wrote a book called Seagology, in which he watched every Steven Seagal movie up to date, I think up to like 2008, and basically identified the common themes and things that show up in Steven Seagal movies. And it's one of the best books I've ever read. If you have a chance to read this book, I highly recommend it. It's so funny. And yet, very well researched. Clearly, this guy watched every Steven Seagal movie like 3 times, if not more, to really get all the details. And it really makes you appreciate Steven Seagal. It certainly made me appreciate Steven Seagal more.
I mean, isn't it true Steven Seagal always, he takes very much pride in making sure that he's representing the correct martial arts stances and things like that? Like,
well,
you know,
there's a lot of confusion about Steven Seagal as far as his origins is what he does. But he was truly an American with a dojo in Japan, which is crazy. Like, no one does that.
Yeah.
But he did it. And then, of course, you have the Steven Seagal Lawman show, which presents this idea that Steven Seagal was an actual lawman in Louisiana in between movies, which I'm going to have to call shenanigans on that one.
Well, I heard, from what I heard from everyone, like, they gave him an honorary, you know, sheriff's badge, and then he just showed up for work, and everyone's just like, well, he's Steven Seagal. I guess we just can't tell him no.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, he's there because of guilt and because he did movies. But
yeah, basically. But, going through it, just reading about everything that shows up in his book, you know, in his films and the common themes and how involved he is, because as Vern points out in the book, is that you couldn't do a book like this on Schwarzenegger or Van Damme or Bruce Willis or those other action heroes of the 80s and early 90s.
I can't believe you left Chuck Norris off that list, but.
Well, also, if I can be completely honest with you,
Sidekicks was a great movie.
I cannot really get behind the whole Chuck Norris thing. I feel that he's overrated.
Chuck Norris is below Steven Seagal as far as the action.
I'm trying to think, like, what's, like, I want someone, okay, first of all.
Okay, what do you...
The Lauren Fritz email is set up, and all we've gotten is spam so far, so people should definitely email us. At laurenandfritz@gmail.com.
We're not doing the show for ourselves, by the way. We're doing it for you.
For you.
We're not sitting here at 11:30 at night just bullshitting for nothing.
No. Someone should email me and let me know what that good Chuck Norris movie is.
Well, no. First of all, it's not about with Chuck Norris. And again, I'm saying Chuck Norris is on the bottom of the barrel. I'm not sticking up for Chuck Norris. I'm saying you have Under Siege compared with... Okay, because Under Siege has got to be... wouldn't that be his biggest movie, you think?
Under Siege... Well, according to the book, Under Siege is his biggest hit, although I will argue that Under Siege 2 is better.
Well, yeah, okay, but Under Siege compared to Chuck Norris's greatest hits, which let's take the movie Sidekicks out of the way because that's whatever. You have a television series, Walker, Texas Ranger, which was a terrible, terrible show.
Terrible show, awful. Absolutely.
So you cannot, you know what I mean? But I mean, it's just the jokes. But anyways.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It's for comedic value.
The joke should be Steven Seagal rather than Chuck Norris. But I think the beard is, you know, Chuck Norris is still looking fit nowadays, whereas Steven Seagal.
He's 70 years old.
Chuck Norris is 70?
He's 70 years old. I think it's. I think the other thing is that he probably doesn't. You know, he's still not made. He made movies up to the point when, and then he did Walker, Texas Ranger, and then that was it. He didn't try to keep making movies, if that makes sense.
Because no one wanted him to, but...
Exactly.
But Steven Seagal, let's face it, he's looking a little...
He's wide. He's wide. Like I said, he was looking big in Machete, although he's, like, one of the best parts of Machete.
Yeah.
So, there you go. No, but anyway, so after reading this book, I promptly added pretty much every Steven Seagal movie to our Netflix queue and just bumped them all up. And then Rachel got mad at me and because I bumped down a bunch of movies she wanted to watch, like A Single Man or something like that. And
some
she was
crap.
Like, bump those back up. Bump those back up. So I had to bump down the Steven Seagal movies. But there were a couple on Netflix Instant. So I watched Marked for Death and Hard to Kill back to back. And you definitely catch those common themes showing up in his movies as far as like...
Can you explain some of these common themes to us?
Well, you're always going to find, the way it's defined in the book, you're always going to find some family shit.
Okay.
Involving him. You're also going to find something involving Steven Seagal's character and his level of involvement, be he's an ex-Navy SEAL or he's an ex-CIA or something like that.
Well, yeah, you got to be
And there's always a level of Seagal has to act outside of the law in a way in order to achieve his goal. In Hard to Kill,
in other words, the law is telling him no, but he says yes, I must do it for the family.
This is right. In Hard to Kill, he's a cop. He's set up by dirty cops to appear as a dirty cop, and then they kill his family. And then he goes into a coma, in which he's in a coma for like 8 years or something, 7 years. And then when he comes out, he has to clear his name while also taking down the bad guys. In Marked for Death, he's a dirty cop who realizes the error of his ways and then has to go to be a good person again. And being a good person means overkilling the shit out of people. I would say those two, just those two, because the thing I noticed is in the book, basically everything, not everything, but a large chunk of the films that he made that had theatrical releases are pretty good.
That's a good album name, Overkilling the Shit Out of People.
Yeah, I think so. Definitely some band should take that. But anything that goes into the direct-to-video, things get very shaky. And actually, I was talking about this tonight with some people at dinner. A lot of his direct-to-video movies were filmed, edited, they had a whole plot going on, and then after the fact, someone decided they would change it. One of the movies, I don't recall the name, when it was filmed, the plot involved Steven Seagal versus aliens. After the movie was finished, filmed, done, they realized Steven Seagal versus aliens is stupid, and they basically... Yes, I know. I would like to see Steven Seagal versus aliens as well. They changed the plot, redubbed a ton of Steven Seagal's lines, re-edited the movie so that instead of it being aliens, it was drugs. And this happens with so many of Steven Seagal's direct-to-video ones. They write them, they go, Steven Seagal approves the script, they go, they take it out, they make the movie, and then someone...
Did they superimpose a drug dealer in a Cadillac instead of a UFO floating in the sky?
Well, the most interesting one I found was there's one movie where you see Steven Seagal rappel down a building, kick in a window, do a barrel roll into the building. You can tell it's obviously not Steven Seagal, but whatever, it's a stunt double. And you find it after the fact that they recycled footage from a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie.
Ooh.
And that was actually Jean-Claude Van Damme. So that one movie is like the only time that Jean-Claude Van Damme and Steven Seagal have been in the same movie because they recycled the footage.
Wow.
But I will say, though, is this book, I cannot stress enough, Psychology by Verne, is one of the best books, one of the most entertaining reads I've ever had.
Hmm.
And, I will be making my way through most of the... Seagal filmography. Marked for Death and Hard to Kill were both highly entertaining films. Although I would say it is surprising when you think of those films and you think about how people say, oh, the action-packed. I think movies now are truly action-packed.
Yeah.
And that movies then, you realize there's a lot of downtime. You know, you get a pretty violent scene, and then, you know, not something, you know, not a lot happens for a while.
You know, Mando had a lot of stuff with his daughter. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, exactly. There's a lot of downtime. But I would say that the downtime in Hard to Kill tends to be hilarious. Seagal is in a coma for a part of the film, but when he wakes up, he has the most amazing beard. Seagal's coma beard. I can't say, but there, that is, okay. The name of your album will be called Overkilling the Shit Out of People. The name of your band is Seagal's Coma Beard. I think you got it. I think you got it. South by Southwest, 2011.
Just Coma Beard. Yeah. Yeah. Coma Beard.
Yeah, you're right. Coma Beard would be even better. I think we just made a career tonight.
I think Infrastar has a new name now.
Or you can name, you know what? It would also work as an album title.
Yeah.
Infrastar presents Coma Beard. I think that's really something. Mark, I want to really quickly talk about Marked for Death. Marked for Death is the film in which Seagal fights drug-dealing Rastafarians. I did not really care for the Rastafarian aspect of everything, in that when they cut the scenes of them doing voodoo and what have you, I wasn't really interested in that. At the same time, that movie does have Seagal totally do this, like, he chops this dude's balls off and then chops his head off in, like, one move. It's great.
And then he also chops.
Yes, it is. And then he also chops a dude's hand off and, like, chuckles about it. And then there is a scene. Everyone talks about the end of this movie. The end of Marked for Death is famously known as the famous overkill scene. I had a roommate in college who would talk about it all the time. Where Seagal basically, like, kills a guy three times in the process of killing him. He, like, gouges his eyes out, breaks his back, and throws him down an elevator shaft where he gets impaled. And that scene's great. Don't get me wrong. That scene's great. But in the middle of the film, there's a car chase that ends up in a jewelry store in which Seagal and, I want to say Keith David from They Live, proceed to just kill the shit out of these guys in this jewelry store. And there's a great shot where Seagal basically takes a guy and just smashes his head into every glass surface he can find, and the camera just follows him around like, wherever you go, Steven, just break all the glass you want. And I highly recommend that. Also, the other common theme is Steven Seagal in these early films. If you have a wrist, he will break it. He will break your fucking wrist. And that is his move, is just breaking wrists. And also, so many great lines in these early films. My favorite, of course, being in Hard to Kill. He realizes who set him up, and it's this evil, corrupt politician whose tagline is, "You can take that to the bank." And so Seagal realizes this is the guy who set him up and killed his family, and he says, "I'll take you to the bank, Senator Trent, to the blood bank."
Ooh.
Yes, gold, pure gold. So right now, if you have Netflix, which who doesn't have Netflix at this point, Marked for Death, Hard to Kill.
Sorry, my cat is attacking the ball that's on my thing right now.
Okay, well, either way, cat attacks or not, Marked for Death, Hard to Kill, on Netflix Instant. It's a movie night. Invite your friends and family over.
You're making me want to watch. And I'm thinking, like, Austrian Death Machine is on the wrong action star. You know what I mean? Yes, like,
don't get me wrong. I love Schwarzenegger. But after reading this book, I feel that Seagal is, in a way, underrated.
I would rather hear a heavy metal song called Blood Bank rather than Get to the Chopper.
Yeah, well, let me tell you. I mean, I will say, though, I mean, let's not underrate, you know, Schwarzenegger. The man did make Total Recall.
Oh, of course.
And, oh, my gosh. So I imagine as we do more podcasts in the future, I will update you on Steven Seagal's biography.
How many are there in the filmography there?
You know, I mean, I think he's got like 30 or 40, but I'm not going to watch. I mean, I'm planning to watch most of the ones that have theatrical releases that I haven't. I own Under Siege 2, because you have to own Under Siege 2.
We know how much you love Under Siege 2.
Man. I love Under Siege 2. McCarty loves Under Siege 2. Anyone knows Under Siege 2. But I'm going to work my way through it. The most interesting thing in the book is that the author makes the point that On Deadly Ground is the definitive Steven Seagal movie.
What makes it the definitive Steven Seagal movie?
Steven Seagal co-wrote it and directed it. And it's they said just everything that is important to Steven Seagal that you see in all of his movies is to the highest degree in On Deadly Ground.
So, well, does he mention his music career at all? Because that's...
Oh, he talks all about his music career. And he actually goes, one of the chapters, near the end of the book, he goes to a concert and he says it was super, super fun because everybody there was obviously giant Steven Seagal fans and they were chanting characters' names and Steven Seagal was right with it. He was totally cool. And then after the fact, he sat down and signed autographs for like 3 hours. Pictures with people. Oh, yeah. Dude is cool. Well, it was definitely cool.
I feel bad, but this is the end of the time. And I tell you what, I have never had this much interest in Steven Seagal in my life, quite honestly.
Hey, I want to say Rachel bought me this book for, I think, my birthday back at the beginning of this year. And for some reason, it sat on the shelf till I broke it out in September. And I was at work and just telling people, like, this is the best book. And people are like, really? About Steven Seagal? I'm like, whatever book you're reading, put it down. You need to read this book.
Well, because Lawman is really tainting it. Because Lawman, he is such an ass in that show. He is just, you watch it and it's a half hour of Steven Seagal just being an ass. So, I mean, like, I forgot that he actually did so many brutal scenes in movies. And
well, the one thing I want to touch on before we go is that there's a scene in Under Siege 2 that has always been a favorite of mine. And it really struck me as an anomaly in action films, is that the whole film set is builds up to the big showdown where Seagal will fight the badass bad guy. And then Seagal just beats the shit out of him like he's nothing. Just swats him around like he's a fucking rag doll. Love that scene. It's one of my favorites. Well, it turns out that's pretty much his MO in all of his movies, is that that's that Aikido style of just basically just swatting the guy around like he's nothing till he's dead as hell. he takes on like four dudes in a convenience store at the beginning of Hard to Kill, just Aikido style, just fucking them up left and right. It's fantastic. I have an utmost respect now for Steven Seagal, and I'm very excited to just go through his entire filmography and just see all that they have to offer.
Well, on that note, we got to end Lauren and Fritz podcast because we're over time. But I got two things. One, the Infrastar album has been leaked, The Pacific.
Yes, The Pacific.
If you guys could really download that and pass it along and let me know what you think of that.
Well, tell you what, I will include a link with the podcast.
Because there's rumblings about we may do one last show with Infrastar. So we are really hoping if you guys could rally around this. And the second thing, just to leave you on this note, make sure you guys fill your Brita water filter before you go to bed, because that's the thing to do. That's what we're promoting is Steven Seagal and Brita water filters. Fill them up. You can fill them up twice, by the way. We learned that.
We did learn that. You don't just fill it up once and then put it away. You can actually fill it up more than once. You just have to wait for the thing to fill.
If you have muscles to lift it.
It can be heavy.
Yeah. So, anyways, I'm Fritz.
I'm Lauren.
We'll catch you guys later.
Bye.